This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, I got a couple social media things going on here I got to ask about. I'm going to bring Josh in here. Sal Capaccio with you, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll get that right out of the way this morning. Good morning to you. It is a Wednesday, February 12th. Did you see the video? I'm just watching this video now of Danny Hurley at following beating Creighton last night.
Was it last night?
Right?
Yeah, this was last night. It's so funny. Danny Hurley, what a character, right? Like,
I mean, Danny Hurley, did they win? They won the game, right? Excuse me. They won the game, I believe, right? I got to check and make sure.
They did. 70-66 over Creighton.
Okay, 70-66. They win the game. So he's getting harassed as he walked off the court. You know, people just shouting things at him. That's what fans do. They yell at players and coaches of the other team, and you suck, and we'll go home. Whatever they're saying, I don't know. Can hardly even hear what they're saying on there. But Danny Hurley is walking off the court, and he's going through into the tunnel, and he starts shouting back at the fans, and he has the best response, two rings, right? And it's like, I mean, what else can you, right? I mean, dude, he's the back-to-back champ, and he just beat you in your building, and you're giving him crap. Like, that's the best response. He doesn't have to say anything else. But then, the funniest part is, he looks at a guy. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He looks at a guy and calls him Baldy.
That's the best part of
Danny Hurley is bald.
Right. Right. But then you can like faintly hear like two rings, Baldy. And it's like, wait, did he just, is he going after a guy that's bald while he is also bald? Like,
right. That's like me calling someone Baldy.
Right.
Can you imagine? Capaccio, you suck. Your opinions are terrible on the air. Shut up, Baldy. Like, what? That's me. Oh, my God. It's great. Danny Hurley. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he is bald. You think he's bald, right? He's not. He does have, like the hair, like this morning I had when I shaved it. I shaved my head. He's got that going on. But you'd call him bald, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, because every once in a while, he'll shave that off and be bald. And
right.
Besides, his hair is basically white. Like, when it's short enough, it doesn't look like he has hair there. Like, I consider him bald.
Yeah, me too. So he calls someone bald. That's amazing. I love it. What a clip. Just saw this a little while ago. Did you see the one he did, like, a couple of weeks ago? He said to an official, I'm the best coach in the bleeping sport. Like, the official was saying something to him or whatever. He was getting on him, and he didn't think he was getting respected by the official. And he says to the official, I'm the best coach in the blanking sport. Do you see that one?
No, that's a bit too far, I think. I mean, saying to a fan, look at my two rings, like, that's one thing. But, like, that's a bit too...
I mean, but this is him. This is him. This is what. This is partly what makes Danny Hurley Danny Hurley, though.
Right, right.
Right? And that family. And you don't have to like the Hurleys. And Bobby did a great job when he was here at UB, and now he's at Arizona State. And it's going okay here and there, not the greatest. But Danny, you know, I mean, he's won two championships. And some people just don't like the family and without the whole, you know, where Bobby played at Duke and all that stuff. I mean, just the style and the family and the coaching. And some people love it. I think it's great entertainment. And he's right. He's great. He's done an amazing job. We are going to talk about the college sports scene today a bit with our buddy Brent Axe. Brent's going to join me at the bottom of the hour. And I did not book Brent to necessarily talk about Syracuse athletics, but you know we do when he's on because that's what he covers. And he's at Syracuse.com. And last night, I mean, Syracuse basketball goes to Miami, the worst team in the ACC, Miami. They're like 1-11. And they, or whatever their freaking record was, I don't even remember. But and Syracuse loses. And it's just so, I'm a hardcore, really lifelong, not just because I went to school there, but like even before that, big time Syracuse basketball fan. And it hurts me, it pains me to see how bad they are in basketball. Like it just sucks. You know, and I don't know if there's any climbing out of it because of, yes, this nice recruiting class coming in. Who cares? Like, I used to really follow recruiting for Syracuse basketball, and I do somewhat now still because of Kyan Anthony coming next year, Carmelo Anthony. But I think this is true for a lot of people in college sports. If you're, this is, like, I think I represent a lot of college sports fans out there when I say this. Like, it's just so tough to follow, like, the way you used to because of the changing landscape. And Syracuse football's done it better, and Fran Brown came in, and look where they are. But even then, like, who's the quarterback? Who's the quarterback next year? Oh, yeah, you have this great recruit. Donnie Freeman comes into Syracuse. Where is he next year? Just going to leave, I'm sure. It's crazy. It's the wild, wild west. It's, you know, you could transfer any time, any year, for any reason. Don't like what your situation is. Go somewhere else. Oh, we're going to pay you a lot of money in NIL. And it's just a wild, total shift in the landscape. And I want to ask Brent what it's like covering, you know, college sports now. And, yes, we will touch on why Syracuse basketball is so bad. Is just because maybe Adrian Autry isn't a good coach? Is it because of NIL money? Is it what's going on? And we'll do that. But I wanted to talk to him about the changing college sports landscape. On the heels, by the way, yesterday, really congratulations. The report came yesterday. Pete Lembo, contract extension with UB football, and haven't reached out to anybody at UB yet. We'd like to get somebody. We'll talk with Pete again down the road. Had him on the show a couple of times, but really, Pete Thamel was on it yesterday. New contract, adds a year to his deal, gives him a raise, includes a significant increase in resources for assistant coaches and staff. They went 9-4 this season, went to the Bahamas Bowl. They won the Bahamas Bowl. He's done an amazing job, and I think that it is interesting to see. Like, some of these coaches can survive and do this, whether it's mid-major programs or it's bigger programs. Look at Danny Hurley, right? I mean, yes. And then I think some of these programs who you traditionally know to be really good have been really tough for them to find their footing and how to do this. So I do want to talk with Brent about that. But that's part of the program today. That's at 10:30 a.m. At 11 o'clock, we'll have Paul Hamilton. The Four Nations face-off begins tonight. Who's playing tonight? Canada and Sweden, is it? Is that the schedule tonight?
Yeah, at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, right? I'm super jacked up for this. And I'm partly jacked up because I think the talent is amazing to watch. But I think I'm just super curious what it looks like, aren't you? Like, how? Remember yesterday I asked Carlo Koliakovo, who joined us yesterday on the program, I said, like, how intense will this be? And he said, that is the question, right? And that's what I'm really interested in, Josh. Like, how intense? Because these guys, I would say, to me, soccer and hockey, like, those two sports come to mind right away when you talk about playing for country and playing for pride throughout, you know, Olympics and history, the last, you know, whatever amount of years and decades. Soccer and hockey always seem like those two sports where it's really kind of matters. And basketball is getting there too now because it's such a global sport, but really those two sports. And when these guys put on a uniform for Canada, for Team Canada, for Team Sweden and Finland and USA, it means something to them. They're also in the middle of their season and trying to win Stanley Cups. And I'm super interesting. And it's interested in what this looks like, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I'm super excited to see the intensity level. I think it's going to be even more than what we expect. I mean, if the Rasmus Dahlin that showed up in Nashville last weekend for the Sabres shows up for this tournament, Sweden is going to really be a problem, I think. I don't think people are giving them enough credit. But another thing that I think is going to be an interesting issue for teams to deal with is the Tkachuk brothers being on the same team and both just kind of being who they are. I mean, they're going to be physical. They're going to be in your face. I mean, I'm excited to see those two go up against that, you know, whatever you want to call it, five-headed monster of a power play unit in Canada. I mean, the USA-Canada game in Montreal on Saturday is going to be the game of the year.
Yes.
Regardless of what happens the rest of the NHL season, that will be the hockey game of the year. Because there's going to be so much going on in that game with the skill level on Canada, just the general rivalry of the two countries in terms of, you know, where they are with hockey. I mean, Canada hasn't won a cup since 1993, so here we are. You know, like it's there's a lot to be had there, and I'm so excited for all the different storylines.
Yeah, we're gonna. You know what's? I keep thinking about this though, Josh, which is you would really hate if they're gonna go hard, right? They're gonna go intense. I think it's gonna mean a lot. But man, you just can't have somebody get injured in a situation like this on a team that's trying to get where they're trying to go, right? That's what I have in the back of my head. I hate thinking like that. I don't want to be negative, but you know, like there's gonna be a couple injuries that happen. It happens all the time in any sport and competitively. There's going to be a couple of guys coming out of this with, you know, nicks and bumps and bruises, and hopefully that's all. But if there's some sort of major injury to a really key player, I don't know if we'll see anything like this again, to be quite honest with you. Like that is going to be, that would be a huge, major, unfortunate talking point, regardless of how good the competition and the games are.
Yeah, that's the one tough thing is it's like when you look, like you brought up soccer, right? Like when the World Cup happens, they have, like the teams have done this for years. So they have their schedules kind of built around it, and it only lasts for a few weeks, but it's in the middle of their off season. Whereas with the NHL, you don't know when your season's going to end sometimes. So like you could be done in April or you could be done in July. Like there's so much variance there where you can't say, oh, well, why don't they just do this in, you know, the end of July, early August? Well, that some teams just finished playing and then you're getting ready for training camp. So it's like, I don't know if there's ever like a good time to do this, which is the hardest part because they're so good. Like this is one of my favorite things. Like, and I wish they could do it more often, but that's the hardest thing is they can't because you have to kind of, you know, keep the players in mind and keep your regular season in mind. So it's tough, but I do hope there's a way they can maybe figure this out eventually because it is a huge draw for people. I mean, this is gonna draw a lot of attention, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be a fun watch. It starts tonight. Starts off in Montreal. Then they go to TD Garden, I think, next week, right? When they start the they have their other games next week, and then the Ultimate Championship, I believe, as well. So we'll talk about that today with Paul Hamilton at 11 a.m. Couple of football items to get to today. Later today, I'm going to rank 1 through 7 the new head coach hires in the NFL, not according to how successful I think they'll be. Totally different. According to how well I think the team did on what they needed. Now, I could say, oh my God, they really needed this and that's what they hired. That's a great hire for them for what they needed. Doesn't mean it's going to work. You have so many factors at play because who's your quarterback? Is your owner a meddling owner? Can you get out of the way of that? But for what the team needed, they got that particular person. And there's some teams that needed certain things that got it. There's some teams that needed certain things that didn't get it. So I'll rank those 1 through 7. 7 new head coaches on the heels of yesterday it being officially announced that Kellen Moore was hired by the New Orleans Saints. By the way, did you see the story, Josh, of possibly Dan Orlovsky maybe adding to the Saints coach, going to the Saints coaching staff?
Really?
That is a rumor.
Okay, because I know his contract at ESPN's up, but
We think that's the case because he did. You may have read that. Maybe you're right. I don't know.
Well, I know
there's been some talk about that, but I do know this. He went on ESPN the other day, and when he signed off, he made it sound like he might not be back on ESPN.
Yeah, that was like the way he signed off of First Take the other day. It sounded kind of like because he said he won't be back on TV for a while. So,
but I will say, though, that the people who do those football shows, Josh, the people who do those football shows, they sometimes take months off because they're grind during football season. So sometimes, hey, I'm not going to be on TV for a while, I mean, like, I'll see you at the draft. Like, sometimes that could be the case.
Right.
But in this case, it seemed like he was more so kind of reflecting, you know, on his time. And then there was a story that came out that I read that said there's some speculation that he could join the Saints coaching staff because him and Kellen Moore apparently are very tight.
I mean, that'd be interesting. I don't really know what he would bring though. Like he does have a lot of good he has great analysis when he's on these shows. Like I love watching him break down the all 22s and stuff like that, but Has he ever coached before? I mean, is this going to be his
first? No, the question would be for me is what is the role? Like, are you actually running a position group?
Right.
Are you in the background breaking down film? Like, that, all of that would have to be decided. Plus, I just don't think it's a great move. However, it's awesome if that's what he wants to do, and he could always go back to TV. But we'll see if that's the case. But I just thought that was interesting with the Kellen Moore hiring in New Orleans. And then, of course, we have James Cook. So James Cook, let me just kind of set this up, and you looked into it a little bit. I asked because I try to keep up with the social media stuff that's going on, and in this day and age, a lot of the players, that's how they communicate. What apparently happened was, and did happen, on an Instagram live story, is that what it is?
Yes.
There was, so, I don't know who was running the story. You could tell me and fill in the blanks on what James Cook did or wrote.
Well, so I don't really know if there's like a moderator or anything because it is his account, right? Like
okay.
He went live on his account. So basically he is just kind of sitting in there and it's like if it's like when we live stream our shows on YouTube now, right? Like it people can come in and comment at him and listen to what he's talking about or watch what he's doing or whatever. Some people do this for video games, some people do it when they're just hanging out. Like a lot of media personalities, celebrities, whatever, do this sort of thing. In this feature, though, a lot like how you can pin a tweet on Twitter, where it'll be at the top of your Twitter feed, you can pin comments. You can pin certain things that you want people to see right when they come in. It'll be the most recent comment, no matter when it was commented. In this case, he pinned his own comment that said 15 mil a year. And I didn't watch the live, so I don't know what he was talking about in it, but the screenshot that I'm seeing is a black screen. So it could have just been him, you know, talking to people or just hanging out or whatever. But the big thing was the fact that he pinned a comment that said 15 mil a year, and it was his own comment. So kind of interesting there.
First of all, if you asked me any player on the Bills who would be going doing a live Instagram story, I would tell you that James Cook would be way down the list. Does he do a lot of these? Does he go live on Instagram a lot?
I'm not really sure. I don't get the notifications when he goes. I follow him on Instagram, but I don't get the notifications when he goes live. So
right,
because you can do that.
Maybe
too.
He does this a lot, but he is not the personality I would think would be on Instagram live a lot.
No, yeah,
you know what I mean. He's a super quiet guy. So I. If you said to me, hey, rank the Bills players who would be going on Instagram live, like, all right, well, Von Miller's going to do that. He's his own podcast and, you know, things like that. Deion Dawkins. I would not be selecting James Cook. So I'm just wondering from that aspect of it, which is interesting. So 15 mil. Okay. So I know the guys talked a little bit about this today. Can we... Here's what I want to do. I want to throw this out because we have Brent Axe coming up at the bottom of the hour. Let's do this now. I have open phone lines. So if you want to call up and get in on this, you are more than welcome, and I could take your phone calls here for the next 10, 15 minutes. 803-0550 is the number to call. How, excuse me, how would you approach James Cook's pending possible contract? Because he is under contract with the Bills for one more year, by the way. Like, this is not something, just so everybody's aware, this is not something like he's going to be a free agent in March in next month. He is under contract for $5.1 million heading into 2025. That is the last year of his contract. After that, if he plays out this contract, he is an unrestricted free agent at the end of next season. So the Bills, though, because he's played 3 years, are allowed now to give him a contract extension. You have to wait 3 years. That's happened. How would you approach James Cook's pending contractual status? The Bills have had, give me a call, 803-0550. I'd like to hear from you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today. The Bills have had this philosophy of running backs and how to treat them and how to pay them. And I think it's generally pretty much worked. Like, they do not overpay for running backs. It is not a position you should overpay for in the NFL. You pay, when you have a great quarterback, you pay him. Like a Josh Allen, a Joe Burrow, a Patrick Mahomes, and whatever. When you have a great left tackle, you pay him. Like a Deion Dawkins gets his contract extension. When you have a great edge rusher, you pay him. Like, these are a corner. There are certain positions you pay when you have someone great. You don't pay running backs because I think in the NFL, you can get by with having a different level of replacement versus a quarterback or a corner or a left tackle or an edge rusher. However, this is the type of running back that kind of might test that theory because he was so good the last 2 years, right? So what is 15 mil a year? By the way, only one running back in the NFL right now, according to overthecap.com, has an annual average contract of over 15 million a year. That's Christian McCaffrey at 19 million. After that, it's Jonathan Taylor at 14, Saquon at 12.5, Alvin Kamara at 12.5, Josh Jacobs at 12. That's it. Like, that would be the second highest in the league if you go to 15. I don't think I'm willing to do that. As great as James Cook has been for me and my organization, I wouldn't do that. In fact, I think I would say let him play it out and franchise tag. It might be actually less next year than that. So we'll get to get your phone calls. In fact, I think Angelo has a question about that. Go ahead, Angelo. What's your question, buddy?
Yeah, how you doing? Hi, Sal.
Good. Thanks.
I was just saying, can't they franchise tag him, or is it just has to go through the process of his contract? And I don't think he's worth 15, but, I mean, they restructure him or what?
Let me see the franchise tag numbers from last year. Give me one second. I'm going to look this up. Here we go. This year, the projected franchise tag number, if someone's going to franchise tag a running back this year, it's only going to be at 13.6. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to go up a little bit. It might be right around 15 next year. They could just do that. You could go, if you went 1 year, 15 mil to try and work it out, that would be better than signing him maybe to an average annual value of $15 million. I don't know. So how it would work, the mechanics of it, Angelo, to answer your question is you would have to let him play out this year, and then if there's no contract extension, you put the franchise tag on him next year before free agency begins. That would be probably about $15 million, but that also gives you time to work out a new deal, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay. All right. Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, you got it. Let's go to Mike in Holland. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? I was just curious.
Good,
do you
thanks.
Think this is Cook's cryptic way of saying he's going to hold out? We don't pay him?
Nope, nobody holds out anymore. If you hold out, it's way too pricey. You just don't get holdouts anymore. It's $40,000 a day or something like that. It's just nobody holds out anymore. So he could try that. But, I mean, I guess maybe you do have an example of here or there a guy has done it, but I just can't see that happening in this situation.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I guess you could say, well, those Sal guys have held out. That's right. I mean, heck, look at who's the guy that did it last year? Hassan Reddick, right? Hassan Reddick held out. He didn't care. He just kept getting fines. I just don't see that happening. It's possible, not to totally dismiss what you're asking right there to the caller. Not totally dismissing. I just can't see it here because players just don't do that anymore. It's just too cost prohibitive to actually hold out. The CBA prevented that. That was one of the really good things they did about the last CBA. They're like, yeah, you're not holding out anymore if you're under contract. Like, if you're not under contract as a draft pick that, you know, hasn't signed yet, you're not getting fined because you're not under contract. You're not, you know, but in that case, there's no reason to hold out anyway because you're getting a structured contract, something that's predetermined based on the formula of draft picks. So I wouldn't say that. I mean, I guess he could play hardball. He might hold out if you want to talk about, like, not training camp, but like OTAs. Sure. I wonder if we see James Cook at OTAs. That could be something that maybe we have a storyline. There it is. I mean, thinking about it now, it probably very much is going to be a storyline. Voluntary workouts, OTAs. Is James Cook there? You also have the issue of four other players. Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard, Christian Benford, and Khalil Shakir. They're all in the same boat. All of them. Like, they're all going into the final year of their contract, and you can't pay everybody. So I just, you know, wonder where this goes. Let's go to TJ in West Seneca. Hi, TJ.
Hey, Sal, it's CJ, but that's fine. Just a quick question. I just want to ask you, because Bean came here, in 2017? He's been the GM. Mm-hmm. The Bills haven't used the tag in the 7 years he's been here. Is that more of like a philosophical thing where they don't want to have to pay like the top five average, whatever it is, for the franchise tag for players?
That's
or is
a good
it they don't
question.
Want to do it for, yeah. Or is it because they obviously.
My guess is that. It is philosophical because let me explain too. What happens is if you use a franchise tag, you immediately tie up all of that money and you can't, now that's right on your cap. Bam. It just goes on your cap and you can't do anything. I think Bean's philosophy has been, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather be able to sign something else to give me more flexibility, because if you sign a deal that's even 2 years, you can push money the second year, you have more flexibility. So I do think it's probably something philosophical. They also haven't gotten to a point where they've really had anybody that's kind of worth that kind of money. I mean, I guess Tremaine Edmonds would have been somebody you thought about, but they never would do it that. And then he got paid even more so on the open market, but hasn't been anybody like that to use it on, I guess. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And then the one thing, too, is that they always talk about culture. And obviously the culture in their locker room is probably one of, if not the best in the league. But if you're a franchise that's known for tagging players all the time, you know, yeah, free agents probably don't want to go there because they'd rather want to get a full contract as opposed to having to play on a one-year deal. So they probably do that for, you know, the sake of player retention, too, where they don't want to have people think that they have to do that all the time to keep their top talent. So.
Yeah, players notice that stuff. They definitely do, CJ. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We'll take a timeout. Brent Axe, Syracuse.com, is going to join me after this timeout. The changing landscape of the college sports scene and trying to keep up with it and covering it. And I mean, I just, as a fan, it's just too tough for me. What's it like even covering and knowing what's going on? And what is going on? And why is Syracuse basketball just in such a free fall and downfall, as opposed to the football team being able to figure it out, I guess. We'll talk about all of that, but really the college sports scene in general. Brent Axe coming up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Yeah, the buy-in has been tremendous. It has been a pleasure to work with these guys. I can count the number of practices since we got here on one hand that I haven't been totally excited about the effort and the chemistry that's building out there. So I do believe these guys love what they do. They're invested. They're buying into the culture. They're practicing hard. I think that'll translate to playing hard. Now the key is, how quickly can we come together and put a product out there on the field to look as if we've been together for a few years and not just a few months?
So that's UB Bulls football head coach Pete Lembo. That was last year when he was hired, and he had come from South Carolina. He had been a coach before in the MAC, and people were wondering, okay, you know, what's he bring? New college sports landscape. How's he going to adjust? And it's been great. He's done a great job. Pete Lembo and the Bulls at UB have apparently reached an agreement on a new contract extension, according to Pete Thamel. And good for him. They went 9-4. They went to the Bahamas Bowl last year. And I think Pete Lembo's done a great job of navigating this college sports landscape. And you got a good coach here at the University of Buffalo. But it's always changing. And that's why I wanted to reach out to my buddy Brent Axe, Syracuse.com. Joins me right now on the West Her Hotline to talk about the changing landscape of college sports and covering it. Good morning, buddy. How are you?
Sally. How we doing?
I'm doing great, man. Always good to catch up with you. You know, I did not book you specifically to talk about, you know, Syracuse, what they would do last night. But after last night's performance, I mean, how can we not start with what the hell is going on with Syracuse basketball? Because I am, I think, of the, I am probably one of many who would just say the word apathy is very much going on here, where I used to love watching this team, following everything about this team on a daily basis. Couldn't wait for them to play again. And it's just so different now, Brent. It just really sucks.
Sal, that's the biggest problem they face. You took the words right out of my mouth. People are not passionate. They're not angry. You can't get angry about sports, like sports anger, right? But people don't care anymore. I'm hearing from a number of people, and you just reiterated it, that they're like, oh, did they lose last night? I didn't watch the game. Or what's going on? Like, they're just checking out. There's just so many other options these days. And even fans that kind of qualify themselves as diehards or longtime fans or whatever the case may be, there's just not a draw to watch this team. And then they go out last night and you lose to, look, it's one thing to lose to Duke by 30, but you go out and you lose to the last place team in the ACC that had won a single game in the league. They've got an interim coach. Miami's been a mess this year. They got a couple of great players, don't get me wrong. Matthew Cleveland's going to play in the NBA, and they've got some talent. But that's the rock bottom loss in the Autry era. And this is somebody who's had 16 double digit losses in his time at Syracuse, and there's been some real head scratchers this year and in his tenure, but man, to just go out there and not play defense at all and fall on your face to the team and at the bottom of the league. This is what's happening now, Sal. People aren't really, I mean, there's certainly a faction out there that is passionate, and I hear from them daily, but that's the bigger concern here, is people that are just checking out and being like, okay, when's spring football start? Or, you know, the lacrosse team is pretty good, or what's on Netflix, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Well, let me get to then the core of the issue. Is it Red Autry? Is it NIL money? Is it just not the right players? Where? What are you hearing? What are you seeing when you evaluate all this?
I still don't know what Syracuse basketball is under Red Autry, and he has been the coach here for two seasons. I still see a lot of the same problems on the court at the end of the Boeheim era. I don't know what his identity is. He has this hashtag, this branding thing called the Orange Standard. I have no idea what that is. Nobody does. This team plays poor defense. They constantly go under screens. I don't know what the offense is. It's supposedly an offense where everybody moves the ball and we move fast. You say all you want about what you liked and didn't like about the Jim Boeheim era and at the end when it was fading. Like, you knew who he was and you knew what they were, right? They had an identity. This team still does not have an identity. So that's a problem. Syracuse misfired in the portal big time. Now, Eddie Lampkin, I think, has been as good as you can get at center on the offensive end. He certainly has his flaws. You got to take the good with the bad with Lampkin, and they paid about $500,000 for him. And he's a serviceable center. The other point, like Jaquan Carlos, is not a point guard at this level. And the other players they brought in the portal are just kind of, you know, serviceable players, but not ACC level guys. So now, Sal, you got to go out next year and reload in the portal. And you have Kion Anthony coming in, who is Carmelo's son, as most of you know, who's a good offensive player. But the fear has to be, is he getting overrated a bit because of what his last name is? Sadiq White comes in, who's a top 40 prospect, who's, think of Hakeem Warrick. He is a Hakeem Warrick, long, athletic, can explode to the basket, pretty good defender, but they're still freshmen. So now you've got to go convince people that have money to give Syracuse that money to go find players in the portal. Now, when the house settlement goes through, and it's expected to, now teams and programs are going to be given a budget of $20 million to spend. But you got to remember, that's on every program. So how much of that do you allocate to football, basketball, and the other sports down the line? Knowing that Syracuse is going to have to reasonably spend, boy, $4 to $6 million at least on good talent in the portal for college basketball. They did hire a general manager, which is just kind of standard these days in college sports. So they're doing all the right things. It's just, do you have the coach in place that can coach this talent, can identify the talent, and can reload in a season where, Sal, they're going to miss the tournament for the fourth straight year. That's an eternity by Syracuse standards. So you're putting so much pressure on next year to fix this whole thing.
Okay, so I wonder if it's too, if it's right to pull the plug on Adrian Autry. And I hate saying that. Love Red. Went to school while Red was there. But the signs are there, right? That I don't know if he is the right man for the job. People say, but you got this great recruiting class coming in next year. It doesn't matter to me because you can replenish in recruiting now because of the way it's all set up, right? I mean, this is the quandary that someone like me turns in my stomach and in my head about all this stuff, to be honest with you, Brent.
These are all fair questions. And do you go all in on a season next year because you're bringing in Carmelo Anthony's kid? And that's the key. Right. Like, is Kion Anthony committed to Adrian Autry or is he committed to Syracuse? So what if, and Carmelo has said, Sal, that he's going to be around the program more. And look, you can't ask Carmelo to give you more money. He donated right. A huge sum of money for the practice facility. He's literally giving you his firstborn child. Like, what more can you ask Carmelo Anthony to do? But you cannot let one recruit or two recruits or a class coming in basically be the reason you bring a coach back. You have got to take a hard look at this if you're John Wildhack. And the problem with that is, Sal, and I'm not saying this is not a reason to do it, but from what I understand, Autry's got a five-year contract. So if you're going to make that move, you got to buy out 2 years of his deal. Syracuse doesn't do that. Syracuse, to my knowledge, there might be one or two examples I'm not thinking of here, but when they fire coaches, it's usually there's a year left on their deal. Well, Jim Boeheim had a year left on his deal. Dino Babers had a year left on his deal. Scott Schaefer, same deal. When they've made head coaching changes, they're not paying guys out for 2 years not to coach. So you got to consider that, but we're in a different era now where everything is accelerated and it might lose more than you gain by bringing a coach back if this continues.
The football team has seemed to figure it out with Fran Brown. So when you look at the entire college landscape, you're covering this, you've covered college sports for many years, Brent. When you look at how teams are approaching hiring coaches, what is, from what you've seen, kind of like what they need to do? Is it the guy who's going to do the best in the portal? Is it the guy who, just give me players and I'll coach them because I'm a coach? Like, how do you figure that out? And what have you seen?
Fran so far has been the consummate example of this sale because he showed receipts in both areas. So you hire Fran Brown, he gets Kyle McCord from Ohio State. Now, the cheat code there was Fran knew Kyle McCord. There were family connections back to the days he called him Little League Kyle when he was watching Kyle McCord and Pop Warner football in seventh grade. They had an in, they had the money, they went all in on a quarterback, and it worked. And meanwhile, Fran Brown strings together a recruiting class that Syracuse had never seen. So he shows results before they get on the field, and then they come out and win 10 games this year. So now Fran Brown, at least it's only 1 year, and now you have to sustain it. And Syracuse has one of the hardest schedules in college football next year, so I'm going to be as fascinated as anybody to see if they can do it. He showed receipts. He showed an identity. His dart philosophy, he sent that message to fans, like, this is who we are, this is what we do, and we need you to be a part of it, right? So Fran came in and established an identity, which Autry, and I know this is not an apples-to-apples or oranges-to-oranges comparison, if you will, football to basketball, but he established an identity. He brought in a key player at the key position, which led to other players transferring in. You still have to recruit. Through all this stuff, Sal, you still have to recruit in college sports. And then he proved it on the field. So makes it look easy, right? So you have an example in the building of what can happen when you do get bold and make a move and spend a little money. And the people that were giving money to the program, sale, not all of them, but a considerable amount of money came in from people that were hesitant to give it before, right? Because they were motivated. A spark was lit by doing something new. So now you got to go out and get money from people who may be what you said at the beginning of this conversation. They may be apathetic towards Syracuse basketball. So I don't care how much money you have. If you come to me and you want a considerable amount of money to invest in players and I'm apathetic about the program, I'm going to look at John Wildhack or whoever's asking me for this cash and say, why am I going to give you $2 million? Like, for what? Like, you're going to be very skeptical of this process. And it should be noted, Sal, that Syracuse in the last couple of weeks has actually hired two new people with a primary focus on fundraising and NIL focus and kind of the modern era we're in here, and there are transactions that aren't quite as sexy as, like, you know, a new coach, but at the very least John Wildhack sees what's happening and he's trying to address it as best as he can. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go out and get the players. And I know this is not exactly the most encouraging conversation in a way. I'll say this, okay, let's put a little hope out there. You know as well as I do, in basketball, it takes one dude. It takes one dude, and it can turn around the whole thing. So you just got to go find that guy. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, and then you also have some dudes who say, I just can't do this anymore. Jim Larrañaga, Tony Bennett. What's it been like watching and seeing this whole landscape for you? And, like, you know, you and I, we've watched basketball, Big East basketball. The coaches were always the thing. And, like, you know, it pains me to see this happening. And I don't want to be old man yelling at clouds, Brent.
Larrañaga was the one that got me, Sal, because he walked away in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to stick it out. You got to ride your team out. But he was so disenchanted. And you worry, like, is there a health issue? And then once we figured out that it wasn't, It's like, come on, wow, this guy, like, how many times has he told his team in some way, shape, or form about commitment and loyalty, and you got, and he can't even take it anymore. And he walks away in the middle of the season, right? To see the, and college basketball is unique in that way, Sal. It's the coaches that are the personalities.
Yep,
there are certainly players that come up, but because they come and go so quickly, it's the coaches that identify the product. And they're pretty much, with the exception of, you know, the Dan Hurleys and the Tom Izzos and a few guys left, they're all gone. So you have this younger generation of coaches coming up trying to establish themselves. And let's face it, they're not as, I mean, Hurley is an exception of the rule. He's a peach. But you don't get that old rivalry sense, you know, Boeheim versus Thompson and Lou Carnesecca. I mean, Rick Pitino's out there kicking ass again, which is great, but man, that is fading out, unfortunately. And I like that you have those coaches that have personalities. Mick Cronin's another one, right? So maybe there's a few more that I'm thinking of, but the list is getting a lot shorter of those guys that identify the product.
Speaking of that, did you see the video of Danny Hurley last night?
I did.
Oh my gosh. Talking about personalities, but here's a guy that knows how to do it, right? He checks all the boxes. He can recruit. He's got this great mentality. He can also coach. Like, I'm not worried about X's and O's. Like, if he doesn't have a great team, I know they're not as good this year, but they're still going to contend, you know, when it comes time for March, right? Like, that's the kind of guy. I mean, I know you can't just grab a Danny Hurley, but that's what I mean. Like, am I looking for a guy who can just recruit the portal and be the greatest personality? Am I looking for a guy that has just give me the players and I'll coach them? That's what's so tough. But, man, you look at a guy like that, I mean, that's the kind of personality. That resonates now.
And it works in college. Like, can you imagine Dan Hurley doing that with Luka Doncic and LeBron James? Like, the Lakers wanted him. He could be coaching the Lakers right now, but that stuff doesn't fly at that league. It certainly does in college. Point his ring finger and tell a fan in the stands, I got two rings, Baldy. Like,
oh, my God.
You can't help but laugh. But it's the fine line of competitiveness and just being obnoxious. And he straddles that. I've never seen a coach that can't handle adrenaline more than Dan Hurley. Like, that guy gets so wired. And I can't imagine, I mean, that man must not sleep from October to April because he's just got so much adrenaline pumping through his veins.
You excited for the Four Nations face-off? I know you're a hockey guy. Pretty cool stuff going on this week.
Yeah, it's unique, right? Let's do something different. Let's mix it up a little bit. You know, Olympic hockey is as good as it gets, so why not try something like this? Why not try to get a World Baseball Classic type of feel in the middle of the season? And I mean, it just goes to show you that our attention spans are waning, and you got to kind of throw these things, like the NBA does it with the NBA Cup, and every sport seems to have to, like, startle us in the middle of the season to remind us that they're still there. But I'm all for it. Let's try something different.
Hey, buddy, thanks. Thanks for this. Great to catch up. We'll do it again sometime. I appreciate it. I'll still be here, and I'll be there when they do it right and become Syracuse basketball again the way I've known them. But I fear that we're here for a while because I just don't know the path right now.
Thanks for having me, Sal. Plenty of seats available at the Dome if you want to come down. But, yeah, hopefully they put a spark in this thing one way or the other in the near future.
You got it, buddy. Thanks a lot. Appreciate you joining me today. Brent X right there, Syracuse.com. And Brent does a great show as well. You can always check him out on Twitter and follow his show and follow his work. We'll take a timeout here. When we come back, we'll take a short break, and then it will be Paul Hamilton at the top of the hour. Four Nations Faceoff and the NHL trade deadline approaching as well.